Welcome back, Chelsea fans, to another episode of the London Is Blue podcast, your home for all things Chelsea FC. Nick, Dan, and myself cover all the match reviews from the latest Chelsea matches. We cover the team news and even throw you some exclusive interviews. Thank you already for being an awesome listener. And you know what? Let's jump right in.
All right, Chelsea fans, welcome back to our second episode of the week. That's right. Brandon, fortunately, this Sunday had to head off to work, but you know what? Nick is here, I'm here, and it's going to be the beard show, Nick. It's going to be, we're going to bring the beards, we're going to bring the fun, and we're going to answer some social media questions.
It's the Nick and Dan show, the show that no one asked for, but it's happening right now.
On 950, the Slammer.
I don't know, it feels like it should be some level of radio talk show where we have ridiculous takes and terrible local sponsors as a part of our, you know, and we have our Patreon questions brought to you by Jimmy's Auto Parts. Jimmy's, where you go when you need a crank.
Yeah, it's Parks and Rec. I know we're both fans. It's the Thoughts for Your Thoughts with Derry Merbles. It's that show.
Oh, that's good. Well, anyway, yeah, we're here. We have some social media questions that we're going to roll through. Obviously, we record these right after we record the match preview or match review. So no new iTunes reviews, no new Patreon names. But Nick, I know you always love to give a little shout out to our friends at Classic Football Shirts for the love that they've shown us during our live podcast and also kind of the lead up to the end of the year.
That's right. Classic Football Shirts was phenomenal to that whole experience was great to be a part of at their London shop. We had a great recording. You can go listen to those, the live pod episodes 1 and 2 in your feed. So you can go click on those. You can also use our code LONDONPOD for 10% off on their website, which is classicfootballshirts.co.uk. We have a sneaky, you know, for those who listen into the second episode every week, sneaky teaser that we may have another kit competition coming out. You know, Classic Football Shirts has given us a couple of awesome kits. We gave away a signed Cesar Azpilicueta shirt right before the Christmas holiday, and we're looking to come back and start the new year really strong. You may see a number 25. You may see 4 letters on the back of that shirt. That's all I'm going to say about it. And we're really excited to get that one started. So watch this space, Dan, because it's going down very quickly.
Yeah, and you know, I scream, you scream, we all scream for a gelato stand owner kit to be released. And that is what will probably be happening in the very near future.
Yeah.
All right, well, now that the ad read is over, we're going to bring you some slicing and piping hot content here. And first up is our Patreon questions. We've got Tom coming in asking a lot about Willian kind of had a good match, and you know, somewhat surprising to him that Callum Hudson-Odoi was a late substitution. But was it a little showing before selling to Byron, or did Callum earn it, or was it due to Ruben's injury? So Nick, do you think the Callum situation, like, was he deserving of getting in that match? Was it a little bit more of a way to drive up Hudson-Odoi's price before he kind of goes off to the Bundesliga second place team? You know, what's kind of, how's it going to work there?
I mean, I think he has earned it. I think he's, you know, if Sarri thinks that he is now on the level of Willian and Pedro, that must mean to me that he's earned it in training. And certainly when we saw him play against Nottingham Forest, he provided 2 key assists to win that game. He's looked dangerous against Spurs in the midweek, and I don't know. I'm happy for him and his performance on the field. I know nothing of what's happening off the field. I don't know if Bayern are making a serious approach, or if they're tapping him up, or if it's only because Ruben is hurt, or if it's, you know, one of 50 other things. But I know for a fact that I'm super pumped for Callum and the way that he's approached the games that he's played. And I think that's all we can really ask right now, Dan.
Yeah. I mean, when you get the entirety of Stamford Bridge outside of the away support singing that we want you to stay, and I saw a couple of people refer to it as being very Arsenal-y, which, you know, I don't buy that for 1 minute. Like, I think ultimately the fans see the level of talent that this young kid has, that he's been with the youth academy since he was knee high, and wanting him to be successful and wanting him to succeed and getting that level of recognition from the supporters. You know, if that isn't going to sway you, if that isn't going to bring you into a desire of like wanting to stay, and obviously there's a lot of factors in play. There's the player, there's his representation, there's the clubs, there's the managers, there's other players. I mean, we've seen Alonso publicly talk on it, Rudiger's talked on it, Jordan Sancho's talked on it. There's just so much noise out there that I think, Nick, that we just need to kind of hit the pause button and say, like, this guy's going to make his own decision, like he's going to sign a contract or not, and that ultimately Chelsea will do the best thing in either scenario. If he does sign the contract, we'll find a way to integrate him appropriately, because it seems like that is his biggest demand outside of, you know, wages be damned. And that if he isn't going to sign it, the club is going to do the best thing in terms of making sure they get the maximum for the deal, that they secure the best arrangements possible, and that they, you know, line up a replacement, because there's no way we're going to run with just Pedro and William until the end of the season as our winger core, with Hazard kind of being in that striker scenario.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, we are not at a point of the season where we can just lose players. Like, losing Fabregas without an immediate replacement, kind of risky. Losing Calum Hudson-Odoi without an immediate replacement, kind of risky. Losing Cahill, losing Zappacosta even, losing Moses, you know, any Drinkwater even. Like, when you lose squad depth and you don't replace that, it just, it is a bad scenario, because you're putting yourself in at risk if another one of your starting players gets hurt, that you're going to have to fill that in genuinely then with someone from the academy. And, you know, I know that a lot of Chelsea fans want to see that, but if you want to keep winning and playing at the, you know, elite level, that's typically not the way to go. So,
yeah, I mean, we think about it this way, you know, in January and February, you know, we're playing a match, essentially. You know, it's not as bad as it was in December when we were playing a match just over, you know, 3 days per match. It's up to now 4.25 days per match. But I mean, we've got Arsenal, we've got Tottenham, you know, we have an FA Cup match, which is always going to be a little bit of a tricky bit of business. We've got our two Europa League matches. We got a Spurs match, a league match. And then we also have our Europa League matches. And, you know, none of those will be a walk in the park. So to shed players without an appropriate replacement, like, which is, I think, what the club would also line up to do. You know, we're not seeing a ton of winger links outside of the Malcolms for cash, potentially for Willian. But again, that's not adding replacements. That's just, you know, keeping us at the same level that we're at currently, which is not the right solution. Like, it's about addition, not subtraction at this moment.
Correct.
All right, so we got another question here from our friend Hamid. So, saying, strong game from Pedro and Willian, what would be the ideal rotation for Hudson-Odoi? And realistically, how many Premier League games do you want to see from him playing significant minutes for the rest of the season? Glad we put some distance between Arsenal and Man United. So, Nick, I think actually what we saw in this last match is probably where, like, that level of getting somewhere between 15 to 20 to 30 minutes a match is probably where I would be super comfortable with what his level of progression would be this season with that terms of minutes. I think the occasional start is not a bad thing against some of the, you know, what we declare like bottom half teams. And I don't know, do you agree, disagree? Do you want to see more? Do you want to see less?
Yeah, like, I don't think, you know, especially given that Willian and Pedro scored the goals yesterday, I don't think he'll be a regular Premier League starter for a little while. And that's okay. You know, I think as long as he is getting consistent, you know, he's kind of one of the first options off the bench, or, you know, depending on the scenario, he gets the occasional start against maybe a lower, you know, part of the league opposition, and then plays in cup matches and maybe some Europa League matches, then I think that's a really good way to mix him in and get him enough experience while also, you know, making sure that William and Pedro are keeping up their end of the bargain too. I mean, it is, you know, I think when we all looked at the beginning of the season, we were thinking about goal output from, you know, kind of our front, you know, four options. You know, I don't think we put a lot of emphasis on Calum Hudson-Odoi having to score a bunch of goals. We did put it on William and Pedro because they're way more experienced than, of course, Eden Hazard. So, from a winger perspective, I think, you know, as the more senior players, William and Pedro have to do their job and pick up the slack from a goal output. But yeah, I agree with your stance. You know, if he's getting 20, 30 minutes, you know, maybe every other Premier League match, and then he gets a really good amount of experience in our cup competitions, then I don't know how much more he could realistically expect. But that's just my take.
So let's look at it this way. So we have Arsenal coming up, which we'll kind of do a little bit more of a longer match preview at the tail end of this episode. We've got the cup game against Tottenham coming up. We have the FA Cup match against a yet to be, I think, determined side. And then we have Bournemouth coming up at the end of the month. So if we have four potential starts for him, like, what would your projection be for the number of starts we'll see from him between now and the end of the month?
I think he will start against Tottenham in leg two of the Football League Cup. I think, you know, potentially he'll start, you know, I think the FA Cup would be a really good shout as well for him to see significant minutes. You know, it just sucks that those are kind of back-to-back. So maybe you'll only see him start one of those matches, and it might be the FA Cup match. You may see him play some decent minutes against Bournemouth. You know, I wouldn't expect a ton of him against Arsenal, but I could be wrong there, especially after a full week of rest for the front three. But then you might see him play against Huddersfield. You might see him play a decent amount against Bournemouth. You know, I think there are minutes in there for him between Tottenham, FA Cup match, TBD still, Bournemouth and Huddersfield. I think those were all four really good matches to see, you know, maybe a start and some significant bench minutes. So that's not bad. I mean, especially as you're looking kind of towards the end of the window, and I don't know if the heat from Bayern tapping him up is still there, but if you're an 18-year-old player who's continuing to prove it in training, to get those opportunities is huge.
Yeah, I would say two starts out of those four is probably where I would target or believe for him to find the opportunities. I actually think him starting against Arsenal versus, you know, what he did in the preseason or the beginning part of the year probably could do some business against their very shoddy House of Cards defense. And yeah, I mean, the FA Cup game, or allowing him to continue and say, look, you had a really strong performance against the Tottenham team that we went up against in the, you know, League Cup. Continue forward on your mission would be kind of a cool little anointment by Sarri to do that. But, well, you know,
and that's why I don't think he'll start against Arsenal.
Yeah.
I think, you know, first of all, that's a big moment. It's at the Emirates. It's not as if it was at home, if I could talk. But I think starting against Tottenham, especially given the way that he played, and I think for 70 minutes, he was the best player on the pitch. Honestly, I thought he was very, very good. Then you give him that opportunity to shine at home, and let the home fans kind of give him that extra boost. And that's a really good shout, especially in a League Cup semifinal. It's not as if that match is meaningless. You know, those are going to be meaningful minutes. And then, you know, we'll see if he can, you know, get some strong minutes in the league. That's not bad.
Not bad at all. But we want to hear your thoughts. How many starts do you think Callum Hudson-Odoi will have between now and the end of January? There's four matches. So if you say five, that is a absolutely incorrect mathematical possibility. If you say negative one, that is also mathematically incorrect. So love to hear your thoughts and kind of understand if you agree with Nick and I think it's going to be two, will be three, will be one. And how many minutes you think that he'll kind of hit between now and the end of the month. So we also had a question from our friend Derek asking, Chelsea's over 30 policy. What is the policy? What's its history? Perceived pros and cons, and maybe have each of you take an up and down stance on retaining it. Nick, you waxed poetic about David Luiz and his through ball magic on the first episode of the week. So I'm going to guess you are probably anti 30 policy over policy.
It's not a bad theory in principle, right? So if you've ever read Soccernomics, there, you know, much like there is in the NFL or the NBA or any other league, once a player kind of hits 30, you know, you start to see in a lot of cases, not all cases, obviously John Terry played well into his 30s, or Paolo Maldini played, you know, almost till he was 40. You know, like, like there are cases that are outliers, but you typically see a significant athletic drop off, 31, 32, 33 than you did at 27, 28. So I think there is the principle of this is the club is guarding against giving a long-term deal to a player that may not have the same outputs as, they once did. So the theory is that you give them a one-year deal and you continually make them prove that they are at that level on one-year deals. Now, the problem with that from an economic standpoint is at some point, your John Terry's or your David Luiz's or your Cahill's or whoever have a really important decision to make. Do I take, the one-year deal at, I would guess are pretty good wages for a player of that caliber, and continue to prove it and prove it and prove it, or do I go take a longer-term deal, for a club that doesn't have this policy somewhere else? And I think that's kind of where it aids. It's kind of a double-edged sword in both, retention and recruitment. Retention obviously being that we need to keep some of our best players, and for us to give Gary Cahill a big deal on his, as he's approaching 30, I think he was like 29 in a few odd months. I think that's hilarious because the difference between 29 and 8 months and 30 is zero essentially. But you have to do that, or, in player recruitment, as we look at, the Gonzalo Higuaín's of the world or the Edinson Cavani's of the world or any of the players that we have looked at in the past 4 years that are over 30, it's hard, I think, for the club to justify investing a lot in that type of player, even though they could be a really great fit in the now. So that's just kind of my thoughts on it. I think from an economic standpoint, I think it's a smart policy, but it doesn't always give you the results in real time that you want, I guess, if that makes sense, Dan.
Yeah. I think ultimately, if we say that it's a cement policy, right, that it is kind of fully set over and that there's no ability to be fluid with that policy for rare extensions based upon service, need, availability within the market, because ultimately, like, there's not always a good replacement available for the player that we're trying to bring in. And even though that we've seen Christensen have a good couple run of games here, to get David Luiz for maybe 2 years at this point, if that's kind of the challenge that he's saying, well, I can go play somewhere for 3 years on this salary, but I would go take a 2-year deal to stay at Chelsea, and that would then allow me to, transition out appropriately and then give someone the ability to transition in underneath me as a level of understudy, that would be fantastic. But if the club isn't going to do it for John Terry, like, they're probably not going to do it for anyone else. And I think there's a danger in the fact that if your policy is so rigid that you're going to end up spending more to go get a replacement, which maybe is not as good or not up to the same level as the player you're going to lose out on. And I get what you're saying for the 1 year or maybe 2 years, and there may be some level of player degradation that you're trying to prevent yourself against. But to me, it's too rigid to allow for the best type of things to happen, which is taking advantage of these really, really talented players who have hit a certain age point where they could still contribute. We saw Drogba contribute at a very high level in his plus 30 range. And again, he's an exception to the norm. But to me, it's too rigid and doesn't have some level of caveat element to it, other than the, well, we'll sign them like Drew on a 6-month deal, and then we'll give them an automatic 12-month option. Like, that's kind of our one way that we've worked around it, which seems to be when we bring players in, but there's no real plan for when a player is already with the team who is over 30 and what the solution is for that type of player, unless we sign them on 29 years and 364 days into right. their next year, which is just an absolutely, like, ludicrous way of, kind of drawing the line in the sand as the birthday, rather than maybe taking some more algorithmic approach to where they are, what type of player, you know, what type of need would we need to fill, what type of options we have that back up that kind of player. Because, you know, I think you look at what someone like David Luiz brings to the table in terms of the leadership responsibility. And we, you know, we're about to lose the last type of connection that this team has to the Champions League winning side. And that Tominic is like the scariest type of reality where, like, you know, that type of DNA like has not been replaced in this side. And when we talk about mentality, like to lose, you know, David over some level of like additional 12 months, to lose John Terry over some, you know, age related contract stings in my mind, because I don't agree with it. Like I get it and I understand it, but as a supporter, I am not a fan of this particular stance.
Yeah, like I think there just have to be special exemptions made, right? Like your John Terry should be a special exemption. Your Didier Drogba should be a special exemption. Your Lampard should be a special exemption. Like, you can go on and on and on. If the club right now needs Higuain to finish top four, and he's 31 years old, and he can come in and score 15 goals in the final part of the season, the club would be, in my mind, harming themselves by not getting him here, right? Like, finishing top four, getting back in the Champions League, getting that parachute payment up again into that elite football competition, and keeping, I think, the squad, Maurizio Sarri, everybody happy, the fans happy, is a big responsibility. I don't short sight that from the club at all. But if that policy is keeping him from coming, then you need to reevaluate the policy. There are, you know, I think we all want Mauro Icardi to come to Chelsea. It's just not going to happen. Okay, like there are plenty of factors that a 25-year-old striker in the prime of his career aren't going to move in January. So I think you have to, there has to be a little bit, you know, you can have the policy, and the policy can remain strong for most players in the world, but there has to be special exemptions made for, you know, the one-off, like your Higuain or Cavani or whoever the hell you want to go get. So I think that's a good thing, and I'm glad we solved this problem, Dan. That's what we're here to do.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll just take that. We'll CC it over to Marina and Bruce, get them to sign off on it. And
what are your thoughts on this, guys? Here's a crazy scenario.
Yeah, I'm sure they're listening right now with bated breath on the.
Can't wait.
It's
another. Marina gets another email from the London Is Blue podcast in her inbox. Like, ah, oh, here we go again. Jesus. These guys with their ideas and their thoughts, it's enough.
It's a regular idea factory here. Yeah, that's what happens when Brandon leaves us alone for an hour. Yeah, just all the ideas start spitballing. You know, we just come up with the crazy solutions. We're going to end world hunger by the end of this episode. We're going to do it. Devin, also from Patreon, asking from Newcastle Thoughts, when are people going to realize that Jorginho is unbelievably overrated? 2,000 passes without an assist in 20 matches. Come on. So, Nick, I know that you are a Jorginho hater, that you are absolutely on board with Devin's thoughts here, and, you know, just really want to take a moment to bury him, you know?
No, like, look, I think this is a knee-jerk reaction. Like, there are narratives that are crafted about players throughout the season. It's a rough patch for Jorginho, admittedly. I think he hasn't played up to his best. I think, you know, much like a relief pitcher who comes on and throws submarine style for, you know, the first like 40 batters he faces and strikes out everyone, the baseball adapts to that pitcher and he eventually gets, you know, homered off of. I think Jorginho is very much in the same vein. He started off with aplomb and certainly has not produced the same level of impact from a passing standpoint in my mind for about a month and a half. And that is a problem, certainly for the team and the way they move the ball, but incredibly overrated. You know, I don't know. That seems like a bit of a knee jerk there. I mean, we also remember the, you know, five or so games in November when David Luiz was the worst defender we've ever seen. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. All these narratives are very knee jerk. You know, David Luiz comes out yesterday and has a really good game. And now everyone loves him again. So, All it'll take is Jorginho kind of getting back on the horse, I think, assisting, you know, making crucial passes, if not assists, I think is going to be a good thing. But this is also ultimately, Dan, to me, a sorry thing. If Jorginho is not functioning in the same way or at the same level that he's used to, especially in the Italian league, then he needs to make the adjustment. And that is not, to me, up to Jorginho to make for himself. I think it's up for Sarri to make from a tactic standpoint. And if he doesn't, then I do feel bad that he, you know, Jorginho has played, I think, the most minutes this year. That's rough.
So, you know, for those listening at home, and no cheating and pulling up Wikipedia. So, Nick, I'm going to hit you up, and you can be the audience surrogate in this moment. So what's the maximum number of assists that Jorginho has recorded for a season under Sarri at Napoli?
Three.
You're close. It's in the actual like Serie A matches, the most he's recorded in a season over playing 35 games, which is the most in any given like season in was four. So he's not meant to assist at a heavy rate in this system. Because you imagine if we're doing short passes, and again, you know, I think vertical tiki-taka is probably the best way to talk about like what Sarri ball is from a like structural standpoint. Like the ball is going to go to someone else, and then that person is going to assist. Like he's
Conte, Barkley, Kovacic.
Yeah, it's someone else who is going to be the assister of the goal, and it's not going to be Jorginho. Jorginho is the person who is going to see where the ball needs to go, and it's two or three steps ahead of him. And he's going to help make that happen. He's going to place the string on the ground so that others can go and follow it. He's not going to be the person that is assisting. So I think if there's some lofty expectation that he's going to be a double-digit assister in the way that Cesc was, like the long balls over the top are not necessarily like a part of the game that like Sarri wants from him. And again, like I think you made a really good point about, you know, is it Sarri that needs to change what he's asking of him because of how the game is a little different from, you know, Italy to England? Is it a matter of Jorginho not doing what he needs to do? I think Jorginho is doing what he's supposed to be doing under this system. And I think it's understanding, you know, the players ahead of him also have to be better in their handling of the ball. You know, Kovacic is not a natural assister of many goals. You know, neither is N'Golo Kante. He'll score one occasionally now, which is very exciting. So, I mean, you're really looking at, you know, Willian, Pedro, and Hazard being kind of the three focal point elements of the attack. And again, when they're not working up to their level, that's what's scary. But I think if we're expecting Jorginho to have more than four assists, that seems like it's an unrealistic kind of situation. So I don't know if I necessarily buy the narrative that just because he has 2,000 passes doesn't mean he hasn't found a way to impact the game.
Yeah, no, I think, again, we've cracked the code. On to the next one.
All right. So we have one last Patreon comment here. It's from our friend Brett, and it was more just a statement. So he said, and credit to him, because now there's, I think, CIA should be publishing it soon, but there's an official supporters group in Sacramento that I know Brett's been working on putting together. So credit to him. Have to make my way out there one of these upcoming weeks. But he talked about the mentality issue we talked about in the last episode. Doesn't matter which manager, it always seems to happen. He did research, and we have 44 one-goal win games in the past 3.5 years. Accordingly, City have 35, which suggests that they're killing off games better, that this could be the difference. Do you think from Brett's initial research that there's a narrative to go into there, Nicholas?
So we have more one-goal wins, and they have less, and they are killing the games off better?
Correct.
Okay. Maybe I'm reading this wrong, but wouldn't that suggest that we are killing games? Well, like, I guess if he's suggesting that our margin of victory is we have more one goal wins, then I guess they're scoring the extra goal to kind of put it out of reach.
Yeah,
maybe
correct.
That's what he's saying. Okay. So I was reading that wrong. So that's my fault. I think that's pretty obvious then that they have been. You know, I think there is something to be said for, you know, closing out, you know, and having a one goal win. I mean, I think that's kind of shows some steel and some mentality there. But City do a really great job of putting their foot on the gas and beating teams, you know, essentially before they can really make a comeback. And it seems like Chelsea in this scenario, you know, go up 1-0, cruising yesterday until about the 25th minute, and then completely just kind of let Newcastle come onto them and let them play for a little while, and results in a set piece goal. So I take Brett's point, and I think the stats then back that up.
Yeah, I don't think there's much more to be said about that. There's definitely an opportunity for us to find the winning goal with a little bit more of a cushion. You know, we'd like more cushion. We don't want the flat seats, the flat hard seats without them. Moving along, though, we have a couple other questions. We have one from Instagram talking about Alonso from Edge G. First time in a long time. It's clear we have trouble defending the left. I counted 3 or 4 attacks again on the left side. If teams keep pounding long balls on Zoe and Willie, how long can we expect these two players who've had trouble on the defensive end to keep their heads in the game? My question is, what on earth will it take for Alonso to lose his job?
So this was an argument that I had with Alex Goldberg on Twitter yesterday, which is always the most productive way to have arguments.
Good job. But, good job, Nick.
You know, I certainly fed into that beast. You know, I think for Alonso to lose his job, someone has to come take it from him. And we haven't seen anybody since he started playing as a wingback for Chelsea 2.5 years ago, and no one's come and took it from him. So clearly, to me, again, we don't see training, but if you're thinking that football is a meritocracy, he's probably playing better in training, performing better in training, and then gets the opportunity to start because that's just the way that football works. So, you know, I think there are significant questions and areas that, you know, we can all see that he needs to improve on, but you know, for those Emerson fanboys out there, I know Dan is one of them, just loves Emerson. Emerson has to come take the job from him. I don't know what else to tell you. Like, it just, that's just the way that life works.
So here's the thing. I, in like the crazy land of where FIFA or Football Manager tactics could kind of come to fruition and you could make the change happen, ideally, I don't even think it's Emerson who's the right person to take his job. If you're really looking to say, you know, someone should take Alonso's job and put him on the bench. I actually think it's a little crazier than that, Nick. And stay with me.
Okay.
I think you would move Azpilicueta out to the left, bench Alonso that way, and bring back the most effective crosser of the ball, a 3- or 4-time player of the month on his side in the championship, Reece James, and place him on the right-hand side. If you really wanted to find a way, because then you still maintain the attacking benefit of having one of your fullbacks, you know, under Sarri, you know, it was this way, where he would have one who kind of pushed a little bit more farther forward, who is more kind of in that attacking vein, and then one who's a little bit more defensively minded, gives Azpilicueta the benefit of, if we get a striker and then Hazard's on the left, still a little bit more freedom to be less responsible kind of for the defensive phase of the game. And then on the right-hand side, you now have, you know, let's just say it's Pedro in this instance, and you have Conte and Reece James. Now you're going to have some really good interchange of the ball, some really good fluidity. And, you know, if it's Higuain gets to feast off of some Reece James crosses, and I don't think you'd be disappointed in how they taste.
All right. Well, I think we've solved it. no, I think Reece James has been outstanding. There are multiple stats out there that will tell you that he is, has successfully beaten the championship boss, if you're thinking about Mario. I think he's ready for the big show. And, you know, when you think about this youth talent that's coming through with Reece James and Callum Hudson-Odoi, and you know, you still look at Ruben, you still look at Mason Mount, you know, are kind of identifying all these areas where Chelsea could lose a Cesc Fabregas, add a Mason Mount, you know, lose a Zappa Costa, add a Reece James. You know, those are really exciting prospects, and you just hope that, you know, in whatever magic happens to decide to when to bring up a you know, a youth team prospect and make them a first team type of player, that begins to take place, because Those four in particular are exceptional.
Yeah, I will say, to me, it's less of beating the boss and it's more of finding the warp whistle and advancing forward a couple of levels.
No one knows what you're talking about.
Nah, man. Super Mario 3, man. People understand that. People play classic video games. It's okay.
All right, well, you guys let us know if you understand what the warp whistle is.
Well, okay. Clearly, Nick was a very sheltered child.
That's right.
And we've touched on a very bit of a moment here. So we're going to turn into a Dr. Phil special since Brandon isn't here and just try to really unpack this, Nick. We're really going to try to understand where the source of this anger and frustration comes from.
I just need to know where your anger is coming from, you know?
It's just because the lineup isn't the way I want it to be. kind of to cap on this, I do think... if the club is also looking to send a message to someone like a Callum Hudson-Odoi that they see what the impact of some of these great youth players are capable of doing and being, to move someone out like Davide Zappacosta, Lazio is the team that he's connected with pretty heavily right now. And I think it's more of is there a forced option to buy versus a option to buy? Because I think Chelsea would like to move on from the Zappacosta experience. Then if they bring someone like Reese in, so now you have another Chelsea kind of academy progeny with Ruben Loftus-Cheek, with Callum Hudson-Odoi on this side now, and you're starting to see get opportunity in minutes. I think that would do more than some of the lip service in the media that we're kind of given right now about how important he is. To see that structurally change would, I think, kind of give the right level of confidence that, signing a long-term contract isn't going to result in him now then being kind of sat back on the bench and then being put into like cryostasis waiting for the next opportunity when he has some leverage. I mean, Callum should be doing everything he should do to the benefit of himself, to get himself in the best situation. And hopefully that is with Chelsea. But if it's not, that's okay. All right. Strikers, Nick. We have a problem. We got a lot of questions.
What? Really?
About strikers.
We do? That's crazy.
We've got one from Sang-Soon Lim. We got Dexter. We got Brad all on Facebook. We got CNG88. Beal Gabriel on the trip with us. Good shout out there. And then Quillian SB, all asking about kind of the striker situation, what's going on, the effectiveness or lack thereof of Hazard and the false nine, and like, who do we want to see come in? And I think, there's probably a short-term and long-term answer to that. I think, in my mind, Higuain is a short-term answer, is probably a really positive solution because he's going to require zero time to get set up and under how Sarri's going to want to play. And he also loves to score against Tottenham, which is really exceptional.
Yep.
So I think those are two positive check marks there. But do you see any other short-term solution, Nick, or are you kind of looking at like what the long-term solution is kind of from summer forward?
Yeah, I mean, in addition to Pulisic and some of the midfielders that we've been targeting, I think the striker's conundrum has to be figured out. It's clear that Morata is not favored. It's clear that maybe, at least it seems like he'll go out on loan at some point if we can maybe secure Higuain in this window. So whether we get Higuain on 6 months or like you said earlier with Giroud, with that 6 month with an option to extend for a year is unclear, but I think that is the best short-term solution, even though he's 31 years old. And I know people are just super upset about how people age, apparently. He is probably our best chance to secure a striker of his caliber. The Cavani thing was hilarious when that got brought up. I mean, we have been linked to every striker from Callum Wilson to Edinson Cavani this window. My guess is that it's Higuain. Moving forward, we have to figure out something. Is it Timo Werner? Is it Icardi? Is it, a handful of other Piatek? Is it, whoever it is? It just has to be, understood, and it has to get solved for as soon as humanly possible, because this system, it does not flow correctly without a functioning number nine. And I know that Giroud's going to be out of contract after this year, So we have to figure out if he's going to be a serviceable backup or not. Like, there's a lot to figure out with our forwards, but I don't think long-term that Eden Hazard playing as the number nine is the scalable solution.
No, and I think it forces him to not take advantage of the best skills that he have, which you know has, which is like the ability to take on, the ability to dribble pass, the ability to make a deeper lying run and kind of bring the ball forward as he just moves through three or four attackers or kind of cocklins them around for some level of capacity. So the striker thing to me, you know, I'm very much on the Warner train. I think he would be a great option. He's out of contract relatively soon. Leipzig have indicated that they do not want to lose out on the value of him, so they would be very much open to selling. You know, Luka Jovic, who's at Frankfurt right now on loan, they have an option to buy him. You know, he's a little bit of a risky one. Same with like Maxi Gomez. Icardi is probably the best, like guaranteed. They will be a solid striker in any type of system. They know how to score goals, and they just that's their job, and they do it. I mean, the challenge is there so many sides need a quality striker right now. So the market is contracting, right? Because you don't have the demand is higher than the supply of people that can plug and play in this situation. So you're going to need to spend a lot for them, which is where if you can take advantage of our amazingly talented youth academy and someone like Callum Hudson-Odoi stays versus having to go sign out like a Lozano, right? Like if we have to go spend £40 million for Lozano, because we sold Callum Hudson-Odoi, so now it's like 10 million more, but we still have to sell a player and we're not adding squad depth. You then don't have the £100 million that you need to go release Icardi from his contract and bring him to Stamford Bridge. It's not a great situation. It really, really sucks. I don't think Tammy Abraham is the long-term solution either, Nick. So finding someone, anyone at this point, is going to be better than having someone who doesn't want to be here. And then maybe someone who is, you know, going to be the right level of speed, pace, technical ability, and then also kind of goal conversion that we need to take advantage of all these chances that we just have squandered so far this season.
You know, as long as Bayern are tapping up our young Callum Hudson-Odoi, we should begin tapping up Robert Lewandowski. Why not? You know, let's really kind of fight fire with fire. He's looking fit these days. You know, why not just go grab that nearly 30-year-old and give him an 8-year deal? You know, I think that's certainly the best economics that I could think of. So thumbs up there.
Sounds like you understand business.
We've solved it again, Dan. We're rolling on this today, baby. We're feeling good. Let's go.
Yeah, I would be interested to hear, just, you know, again, as we, you know, shout out to the listenership. But, you know, who are you looking for? You know, obviously, if we're saying what's your short-term answer, what's your long-term answer? Obviously, Callum Wilson is, you know, linked pretty heavily. It's another individual who's been kind of frequently connected to Chelsea. Would be very expensive being a homegrown player. And also, you know, injury-prone, has come back from those injuries and has scored plenty, but would be a question mark too, is like, is he of the caliber of player that we need? So what's your thoughts? Who's the striker you're looking at us to get? And, you know, is it a short-term or long-term solution? So last question to kind of round off here on some of our social commentary. So Stu Logan 22 Instagram hit us up, Nick, and said, probably isn't an answer to this question yet. Wrong. We're going to give you one. But hey, here it goes. What is the most important win of the season so far?
The most important win of the season?
Yeah.
This is not the best win of the season, but the most important win of the season?
Yeah.
I would say beating Arsenal, second match of the year, probably our most important win of the season. I think, you know, we you know, if you rewind your brain all the way back to the beginning of the year when we didn't know if the season was going to be a slow start or a fast start, ended up being an extraordinarily fast start. That was a crucial moment. You know, you have to think back, and they leveled after we had a really brilliant kind of opening salvo, and you know, it was on a knife's edge, and then we got the winner through Marcus Alonso. It really kind of, I think, lifted the mood around the squad. There's a lot of excitement, and you know, beating Arsenal is just the best. So I really hope we do it again on Saturday.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout there. You know, I don't think I can look past the victory versus Man City. I mean, I think,
yeah,
you know, again, it's at home. You would expect to challenge or make those games difficult at home. But, you know, winning that match 2-0 against a side that at the beginning of the season, people were wondering if they were going to do two league wins in a row, two title league wins in a row, and to take the Centurions down and make life difficult, and to do it on the back of an N'Golo Kanté and David Luiz goal is quite exceptional. So, you know, I think that was, it showed the possibility of us being able to win in a different way. And I think right now, like, as we're looking to win, as we're looking to convert our chances, again, that was a, we only had 5 shots on target that game and 8 shots in total. And Man City almost doubled those, 14 total shots. They had 4 on target that game. We played with almost no possession relative to what we typically have. We had the ball for less than 40% of the match, and we still found a way to win. So I think showing that we have some level of flexibility, Sarri has some way of making a game winnable by a different route is helpful. I don't think he's always going to do it, but to see that he has some level of flexibility, I think was important for, you know, our fan base to see that, you know, it's not going to be just all possession all the time. We are going to go up against sides. We're going to challenge us in that capacity, and how we respond to that level of adversity is important. So to me, it's the Man City win, but I see where you're coming from with the Arsenal victory. And I think that that's a really, really great shout too, because obviously if we had lost to Arsenal right away, especially with the track record that Antonio Conte had against Arsenal, probably would not have been a great start to his Chelsea career.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, we'd love if you could tweet at us at London Blue Pod or Instagram us, we'd love to know what your answers are on this, but I think those are two pretty good shouts.
Yeah. Again, nailed it. We're just killing it. We're killing it this whole week. Yeah, Mike's not feeling well. We're sorry about that. Brandon's working. We're also sorry about that because it's Sunday, and
Look, we're playing hurt, Dan. We're both sick, you know. Like, but it's about showing up, you know. And I think we've done
the best today. Ability is availability, as you tend to say, Nicholas. And
I've said that once or twice. Correct. Yes.
If we had a bingo board, I feel like yours would have that quote, and then also meritocracy would pop up pretty heavily for you.
Yep. It sure would. Yep.
All right, so let's move along real quick here. And before we go, we obviously, you know, ending talking on Arsenal here. But match preview, Arsenal, Premier League, next game, no midweek match. So no having to force a meeting on the calendar that didn't exist, no having to come up with a doctor's note for a appointment that you never actually went to. Obviously this is going to be a very crucial match, especially dependent upon the result of the Spurs and United game, where we can really kind of find ourselves potentially moving up into that, that third position and further solidifying our hold on a top four spot.
Yeah, I think this is huge. I mean, obviously Arsenal lost to West Ham, on Saturday.
Beautiful goal too. Beautiful goal from former Chelsea Academy individual Declan Rice. So former Blue doing the work.
Correct. And so you're now 6 points clear of Arsenal. You know, if you play this out and Chelsea is able to win at the Emirates, which we have not done for a little while, which is sad and terrifying, and I hate that a lot. Almost as much as I hate losing the Spurs 3 times in a row. I mean, these are all things that are terrible, and I hate them. Then we would potentially be 9 points clear of Arsenal, which is not nothing. I mean, it's certainly not a death nail in their coffin in terms of the top four race, but it would be a significant gap to be on 50 points while they're on 41 points. And, you know, you just never know how the rest of the league's going to fall. So this is in my mind, for Chelsea and their top four aspirations, this would be a really nice one to have. I don't think it's a must win, but it certainly would be a feather in the cap to play Arsenal twice in a season, Dan, and beat them twice in a season, and make sure that we're basically doing everything we can amid a crazy end of January fixture pileup to position ourselves in the league to do the business.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, there's a lot of results that have not gone our way appropriately this season, and, you know, one or two of these draws that should have been wins, or one or two of these losses that, you know, also should have been a win or at least a draw, Chelsea could be very much within the title conversation because we are, you know, only 10 points behind Liverpool, which when you say 10, it seems like it's a lot, but it's not actually when you kind of look at it at the end of it all. You know, we're 3 points behind Manchester City at the moment. They do have to play Wolves on Monday. So, you know, bending the result of that, which Wolves have forced them to a draw earlier in the season. So very likely a possibility where they could be, we could win against Arsenal and be potentially only 1 point behind City with them potentially having a game in hand. That is also exceptional. And yeah, I mean, I kind of view it a little bit more as a must win. I think that this is the time to start putting distance away versus kind of being in the situation where, you know, we're kind of having to play catch up or looking over our shoulder, or looking at other teams to get the results that we need for us. I would much rather that we continue to be the controllers of our own destiny and say, you know what, if we win this, like, we are making top four that much easier for ourselves at the end of the season, because, you know, Spurs have not shown an, you know, inability to score. They are scoring for fun. United look so much better post Mourinho, which is not a surprise. And Man City and Liverpool are kind of the locks, right? You know, so if you know that you only have two spots on the table you're fighting for, a third or a fourth, or potentially flopping into a second, depending on what goes on, that is a scary scenario when there's two potential spots and 3 to 4 teams that are competing for them in the, you know, the most exciting league in the world. So I don't know about you, but to me, it's a must win. And I think it's all going to come down to the fact of, like, can we continue to find ways to score, you know, without a striker? Because I don't know if a Higuain would be there and be ready and be registered by the time this game comes up at the end of the weekend.
Right. Yeah, it certainly doesn't look that way. So it would be excellent to get these points. It's always excellent to beat Arsenal. I think they're my favorite team to beat.
Is it because of Arsenal Fan TV? Do you just go enjoy the tears afterwards?
No. I don't know if anyone watches that anymore. Like, honestly, it kind of feels like old news to me. I love the elitism of Arsenal Football Club having invented football, and for Chelsea for all these years to have essentially played the perennial role of just master in that scenario. So we've certainly had our share of good times recently against them, and certainly want to keep that going. So let's do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing that continues to be the Achilles heel for Arsenal is they have very much scored above their expected goal total, thanks to Aubameyang just going on an absolute tear, as it were, is that their defense has been rather suspect through the entirety of the season so far, Nick. And I think that's where, if we are going to do the business in this type of match, it's going to be down to the fact that Arsenal and Emery have not really found a solution to protecting Leno or whoever they put between the sticks in the match from just kind of a barrage of shots and shots that end up getting converted.
Yeah. And I think, you know, conversely, you know, I think when we played them in the reverse fixture earlier this season, our midfield was, you know, while our midfield struggled defensively, I think controlled the game from a tempo standpoint and from a just kind of overall swarming point. And if you think back then, N'Golo Kante wasn't nearly the insane offensive player that he is now. So I think this could be a mismatch in terms of the midfield. You know, Granit Xhaka is also due for a red card sometime soon, so let's have that be against us.
Yeah, yeah, probably for hacking down Eden Hazard at some point in some capacity. It's probably probably not a bad bet. I mean, we don't advertise betting or gambling on this show because we are god awful at it and probably the last people you'd want to take advice from.
Just terrible.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, go take it from Marco, Gate 17 Marco. He's the legend.
Yeah, but he's also getting the inside scoop from Bobby Tambling. So I feel like former players probably have a good a better grasp on it than we do in some capacity. But you know, again, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Do you think we're going to smash Arsenal? At this point, Marcus Rashford has just scored to put Manchester United ahead of Tottenham. So we will depart on that note, unless you have another final thought you'd like to share, Nick.
I would not. Let's make sure that we we do the business against Arsenal. That's all we can control. We can't control any of these other results.
All right. Well, no midweek match, so enjoy yourself, friends. Have fun. We will see you on the backside of hopefully a wonderful win over Arsenal and Chelsea, picking up 3 more points in the Premier League to solidify our top 4 chances. But until then, you know what to do. Keep the blue flag flying high.